Hi, welcome to the Feng Shui Your Life podcast. I'm your host, Tisha Morris. Join me in this beautiful space where spirituality meets design. From informative Feng Shui tips to inspiring design ideas to mind-blowing cosmic concepts. It's all here. Stay tuned.
Welcome, everyone. This is Tisha. Thank you so much for joining me. Today, in keeping with spring cleaning, spring detox, we're talking all about clutter. And today's episode is called Clutter Be Gone Once and For All. And the reason why I titled it this way is, you know, today I really want to get into the core of why we hold on to the things that we don't necessarily need to be holding on to. And to join me in this conversation, I have with us today, Becky Bacon. And I wanted Becky to be part of this conversation because I know that, like me, we share the understanding that clearing clutter is a lot more than just practical tips. And so we're going to dive deep today. Becky, you can find Becky at BeckyBacon.com. She is a certified life coach through the Martha Beck program. She has been doing professional organizing. She's a member of the National Association of Professional Organizers. She's also lead accredited professional, which has always been on my bucket list to do. So she's a lead certified, and she's a Reiki master. And and she is a graduate of the Earth Home School of Feng Shui. So she's one of my students. And so she knows all about Feng Shui as well. And so welcome, Becky.
Thank you, Tisha.
Awesome. Yes, thank you.
It's fun to be here.
Yay. All right. So before we dive too far in, I want to give listeners just a little bit of a background of you. And I'd love to hear, because actually I don't know that I know fully, like, what brought you into alignment with working with spaces?
You know, I have been drawn to spaces and the power of spaces for 30 years. And it started quite innocently. And this is funny because I was just telling the story to a group of women yesterday I was giving a talk to. And my earliest years was my teenage years. And these were probably like junior high years, right, when all of my girlfriends were babysitting, right? That's what you did in junior high. That's how you made your money. And I was drawn to cleaning houses and organizing these busy moms. And I just fell upon it, and I thought, you know, this is actually easier money for me. It's more money than babysitting. And I'm helping these families, and these women appreciated me so much for the work I was doing. And, you know, I'm like 14, 15. I'm just thinking, hey, this is easy money for me, and it's fun, and I'm like, there's a before and an after, and it was like it was tangible, and I just enjoyed it. It was very innocent. And till all of a sudden later did I really start realizing, and as I got older and I just continued to work with space, that the power of a clean environment, the ripple effect it has on a family. And I didn't have the awareness as a teenager, the cognitive awareness, but I definitely felt the impact I was making. And every week I would go back, or every 2 weeks I would go back to these households, and a lot of it was just tidying. You know, there's some cleaning involved, but just, you know, tidying and helping them put systems together. And the relief that came on these women's faces and their bodies, and how they relaxed, and how the kids relaxed and the family relaxed, having their spaces tidied, was really profound. And I think anyone that actually, you know, cleans their house or, you know, hires support to do that, we all feel it. And when I started actually doing that work, it really purely was money to go to the movies. But when I started getting into it on a career-wise after I got out of school and I started doing a lot of trying to sort out my career, I started coming back to working with space. So I started moving into commercial space. So I started becoming an office manager, and that led to a facilities director, and that led to like an international facilities director, where I opened offices and helped create environments for businesses to thrive. And the power of that space and how that space is aligned supports communication, it supports financial flow, right? Everything supports the bottom line. How people move in the space, it creates culture. Like, what kind of culture do you want your company to have, and how does that space represent that? And at the same token, it destroys all of that too. Mm-hmm. So if things are not in alignment, if you're not paying attention to how the space is laid out and how people flow through that space, it is going to affect your bottom line and communication.
Absolutely.
And people's happiness.
Yep.
So from there, I did that for 20 years, and I started really paying attention to individually how it was affecting people and wanting to work with people on individual levels of working in their home, because if their homes are supposed to be their nest. It's supposed to be where they rest and recover. Particularly if they're going in every day to an environment that isn't supportive of that, that you don't have control over, how can you control your home environment so that's actually creating and building and helping you, you know, rest and recover? And also supporting your goals, because your home environment can really pull from you and get you off focus if you're not sleeping well, if it's not easy to find things, if you're spinning out and spending a lot of energy. You know, the home can be a positive flow and a negative flow.
Yeah, like I always say, I mean, your home should be a supportive environment, not a challenging one. And that's what people like you and me are helping people create that. And yeah, well, that's so fabulous. You know, I find, going back to your growing up, I find, like most people, how our earliest experiences like show us the direction that that comes most natural to us for later in our careers. I grew up, my earliest childhood memories was of my parents building our house. And so it was like in my bones of that building process and the soul of the home. And then again, my parents built another house in my high school years, and I was part of that process. So it's like, you know, for anyone who is searching for what they're supposed to do in life, looking back at those early years and how, you know, how for you, it's like followed you wherever you went. So you went into the corporate world, and yet you were still, it was still all about creating space. It's like when I was, you know, teaching yoga, it was actually the space that I created for people to fall into their practice that was really what made me the better yoga instructor, what made me a yoga instructor that was that I was able to bring to the table, so to speak. So you've had I love your back. You're definitely more organized than I am. So you've gotten
on good days.
But you know, I think that's it's that combination when it comes to decluttering. It's the combination of the practicalities of the organization, but also that emotional component. And I know you have a life coaching background, and it's just, to me, decluttering is very much likened to losing weight. And you have to approach it from the emotional, mental component of, you know, why it's there to begin with, and also the practicality of, okay, I need to exercise and eat properly. And so to me, decluttering is very similar to that. I think the biggest challenge in both of those, and that metaphor, is overwhelming. I think when someone's setting out that, oh my gosh, I have to lose 50 pounds, or oh my gosh, my house is over, like I don't even know where to begin in my house. I think overwhelming, and which is just a mirror really for everything in one's life. If it shows up in one place, it's going to show up in every place. I think overwhelming is a dominant emotional energy that pretty much mainstream America struggles with. So I know you recently gave a talk on overwhelming. Can you share some insight as to that?
Sure. Let me start let me start here. When I first started organizing, it was very innocent in, okay, let's just, you know, put some flow back into your space. And, you know, declutter it, get rid of what's not supporting you. And what led me into the coaching part was when all of a sudden my clients, when we started moving things in their space, how emotional they got. Every single one. And when I started paying attention to that emotion, I thought, oh, that's, wow, okay, so what's happening here? And making that, and this is innocently, you know, years and years and years ago, making that connection to all the emotion that was coming up with the physical space when we started shifting things. And when that's what led me into the coaching, because I realized, wow, actually, your physical space is a three-dimensional view of what's going on internally for you. Mm-hmm. It's not the other way around. And so the majority of my clients will come to me saying, I just need to get organized to get on top of things. That's my problem. Mm-hmm. But what they're not recognizing, and sometimes won't recognize until we start moving space, is that there's a lot of internal conflict happening. And that is always some level of overwhelm. Mm-hmm. And whether that overwhelm
– Are you there, Becky?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Is the call dropped? Like, I guess the call got so overwhelmed.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, Dad, it did get overwhelmed. There were so many people on it. So getting back, I'm not sure where it dropped, but just a quick recap is that overwhelm really is the root of clutter. Mm-hmm. And when you get overwhelmed, and overwhelm doesn't necessarily mean that you are, you know, wrestling with, you know, fits of anxiety and, you know, and depression, and it doesn't have to be that big. It can be that big, but it can also be really small, where you just can't think straight anymore, and you're racing the clock, and you're not, you know, maybe you just have a hectic day, and you're like, wow, I'm not present in my body anymore. I'm not, I'm in complete reaction mode more times than I'm actually in response mode or feeling that ability to be in response mode. And whenever you switch into overwhelm, that's when we start disconnecting with, we don't take the time to make decisions of where things need to go, or time is of the essence, so we don't feel like we have time to put that item back or to sort the mail. Or, I mean, it could be the smallest things.
Right.
And we ignore it because we're going to do it later. The infamous word later. And as Peter Walsh says, my favorite organizing guru, he's like, later is the best friend to clutter.
Oh, nice.
And they really are. I mean, every time you say later, that later continues to, it starts to build. As the mail pile that needs to be sorted starts to build. So catch yourself every time you use the word later. And there's certain words and internal dialogue that we use when we're in a state of overwhelm that we don't necessarily catch ourselves on.
And yeah, I think it's such a default emotion or vibration level, really, that it just seems normal.
Yeah, it does. Just like, oh, I'll just do it later. And particularly for something you don't enjoy doing, and that's when it gets really easy to put off. It gets really easy because you're like, you know, you don't want to do it. It's not fun. Or you feel like it takes too long. And you know, I know I'm guilty of, you know, I'm looking at my paperwork, you know, I'm like, oh, I'll just go through that later, right? And now I'm like, okay, it's not fitting into my box anymore. It's overflowing. I can't use that anymore. So, but instead of making decisions on the paperwork that comes through. You know, maybe it really, you know, clutter ultimately is just delayed decisions. And that's how we need to look at it. So when you have, you have a piece of paper, let's say a bill that comes in, and you're like, okay, I'll pay this later. But if you have a couple minutes, if you have maybe 5 minutes, why don't you pay it now? Or
go ahead. Clutter is delayed decisions. That's brilliant. That's a tweetable.
It's a tweetable. And that's all it is. And I think that's what we need to look at it as. Because every time you use the word later, you're delaying the decision of what needs to happen with it or where it needs to go or putting it back.
And I'm imagining you're better at this than I am, but like this is where systems can be really helpful, which is really the yang, the masculine side of what we have. This is when like our analytical mind can actually be our best friend because it can help counterbalance all the emotions of everyone. So we have systems in place; those decisions aren't so difficult.
Exactly, and that it's this, and a lot of the time clutter, I would say a good portion of it is that you don't have a good system. You've either tried systems and they've broken down for you, or you just haven't had time to put a system together. And again, delaying the decision of finding a system. And systems are, systems grow with us. So if you have one system, it's not necessarily the same system that's going to be with you or your family forever. So it's taking that time to review it to say, hey, does this still make sense for us to do it this way? And when we have a lot of clutter, the irony is it's overwhelm that creates the clutter. And then you have enough clutter, it's so overwhelming to think about, to do anything with. You just leave it. So it starts with overwhelm and it ends with overwhelm. With a little clutter. It's like a overwhelm sandwich, right? With a little bit of clutter in the middle.
So these
go ahead.
Well, I was imagining it can be as simple as like how I handle my email. Like spam junk immediately goes into the delete. And then things that I need to get to later stay in my inbox. And then things that I need to keep for later go into my keep file. And then I flag the really important emails. So that's a system that, for example, I've come up with. And so when you say systems, it can really be that simple, right?
Yeah. It could be the simpler you create your system, the more you're going to use it and follow it. And, for example, you know, you want minimal amount of steps to take care of something. So let's say you have something you need to put away, right? You want, if you can put away one step, is ideal. No more than 2-3 at the most. So the mistake a lot of people make is that their goal is to have this, you know, all the countertops clear, your home's looking like, you know, Architectural Digest pictures. And the reality is that's not how we live. You know, life is messy and it gets hectic and chaotic at times. And when you have kids and we've got busy families, you know, it's really not everyone's on the same path of keeping things clean. And that's, you have to have too many steps to get things so clean to give you that visual calmness that things never get put away. So when you look at, you know, the biggest tip when I work with clients is minimize, process something. And process is just a general for, you know, what needs to happen to that piece of paper, what needs to happen to those soccer shoes, what needs to happen to, you know, the gym bag, the, you know, the homework bag, whatever that item is, the TV remotes, right? It's like keep it really, really simple in your process and try a system. You've got to use a system every day for at least, well, we know 28 days it takes the brain to create a habit. So at least a month to see if that system works for you. And it takes a little getting used to, but there should be a natural flow that feels right. So like, so how did you figure out your email system, for example?
Right. It's the same way I handle regular mail, you know, the credit card, the junk credit card immediately go in the trash. And then I have a stack of things I need to get to so really, you know, I think for any system when it comes to decluttering on any level, it's getting rid of the easy things, like the no-brainer where there's not even a thought in it.
Exactly. The low-hanging fruit.
Okay. Yes, yes, yes. And then, you know, that, because the less visual clutter you have, that actually, you know, that creates an energy flow. It reduces the overwhelm. And then when you get to the stuff, whether it's on the logistical, like mail level of things I need to deal with, then, you know, that's going to take a little bit more effort. Just like an item that holds a lot of emotional weight, it's going to take a little bit more processing than the easy stuff.
And it takes energy too when you start processing the things that where you need to make decisions. So the easy decisions always go for those first when you're trying to create systems. The quick yes and no's that you don't have to use any brain glucose for or any brain energy on. That helps you build momentum so that you're like, okay, so now I need to think about this. And you kind of escalate it so that when you actually need to do some heavy thinking of like, what do I need to do with this thing? And it, whether it's a, you know, a payment, because if that, when you're processing something, sometimes it takes 5 steps to process it. Bills keep coming up, but if you have like a project you're working on and it's many steps, knock off the easy steps first, right? And then carve out that time if it's to figure out when, you know, how you're going to put more thought and problem solving into it. And that's where we get derailed. We do the easy stuff, and then we have to get to the hard stuff, whether it's putting stuff away or figuring out where to put it, or, you know, maybe there's some emotional ties to that, and we can't quite discern, like, oh, do I really need to hold on to this? Do I not? And that's usually where we abandon the process.
Yeah.
Because it's heavy, and there's ties to it, and then we usually get into what I call the shame zone.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff we hold on to that we know we don't need it, but we can't seem to get rid of it.
Right.
And that. Go ahead.
But that's where I was going next.
Yep, yep. You want to go there? Are you ready?
Yeah, and it could be as simple as a bill, but it brings up guilt because shame zone. I love that. Whether it's around money and bills or an item from that's been passed down from generations, the amount of guilt that and shame that comes into these processes that most people are not aware of, and I think, and this is part of why I wanted to have this conversation. When people become aware of it, it actually can transform really quickly.
Yeah, almost instantly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it brings that emotion kind of out of the darkness and mm-hmm. into the light to say, oh, interesting. I'm having this emotion around, you know, why am I having emotion around this weird bill, right?
Right.
Okay, well, let's investigate it. You know, is this a purchase that you regret making, turn it, and, you know, you're kind of stuck with it, and then now you're having to, you know, take money out of savings to pay this big bill, and you're like, why did I buy that bright pink couch, you know, that's now sitting in my living room? Like, did I really need that? And there's no returning it. And so here, you know, here's a typical scenario. You've bought this big, ugly, pink couch that reminds you of your grandmother. For some reason, you were, I don't know if why you bought it, but you did. You don't know why you bought it, but you did. So so first, the couch arrives, right? And it's sitting there, and you're all excited. And the more you look at it, you're like, what was I thinking? And you're not feeling good about the actual couch itself. And you're like, well, I bought it. You call the store. They're like, you know, no, it was a final sale. You're stuck with it. So sitting in your living room, you see it every single day. So that's sending a vibration and an energy into your space. And it's creating a lot of emotion of, you know, guilt of like, wow, I just spent, you know, thousands of dollars on this couch that maybe I did or didn't have. I'm stuck with it. Now it's in my space. Maybe I should keep it. And can I ignore it? And you keep walking by it all the time. And every time you look at it, the visual clutter, it weighs on you. But it's the emotion that couch is exhibiting every time you look at it is usually shame of like, wow, what was I thinking? Mm-hmm. And now what do I do with it? Then the bill comes through and your credit card. You're paying your credit card and you see this line item. And you put it off because you're like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to feel those feelings anymore. Or again, I need to delay it, right? So then you put off paying your credit card. And that gets put off. And then all of a sudden, you know, the next credit card bill comes through with a late fee. Like it starts, like one simple purchase can start a firestorm of mm-hmm. shame and emotion. Mm-hmm. And when we get an overwhelm, we usually, you know, human nature, we either go into paralysis mode where we don't do anything, or we go into like a propel mode, which ends up being this frenzy of activity that isn't necessarily grounded or purposeful or efficient or effective, actually getting something done.
Mm-hmm.
So notice, like, when you're in overwhelm, like, what starts happening kind of with your energy. So if we go back to the couch scenario, if you hit overwhelm thinking about that and the number, you know, it's finally coming through on your credit card bill and you keep ignoring your credit card bill while there's other purchases on there too, everything needs to get paid, you know, that starts to build up. And every day you get reminded of a bad purchase. That money is gone. It's already done. At this point, you know, it's the only way out is taking action.
Craigslist. Because
that emotion builds up and it builds up and it builds up. But how do you take that action? How do you get yourself out of that if you're in paralysis mode? How do you get ultimately just want that couch at your house? But that takes several steps. It's not a one-step deal. Are you going to sell it? Is it an eBay thing? Is it a Craigslist thing? Is it a FreeCycle thing? You put it on Nextdoor. Like, who's going to want this couch is the first thing in your head. You don't want it, so you can't imagine someone else is going to want it. So you derail yourself right there thinking, well, no one else is going to want it, so I'll just hold on to it. I'll just leave it. And the more steps it takes, going back to that theory, the more steps it takes to deal with something, the more often we just let it sit there. And it slowly chips away at our emotional sense, at our, you know, internal being, our mindset and our emotions. And the ripple effect on that is profound.
And yeah, because you're in the vibration of guilt, even more so.
Even more so. And it really becomes this, like, hyper-focus, too, where people come over, they're like, oh, look at your new couch, right? boom, that sends you right down that slippery slope again. So, and you could definitely talk about it from the feng shui standpoint of like having something like that in your space. But this is a perfect example of clutter. And we're just talking about, you know, big piece of furniture, but really the same thing with paperwork, the same thing with, you know, our closets of not, let's say, you know, your weight's fluctuating, you know, for a number of reasons, whether it's a health issue, whether, you know, you're having hormonal stuff going on, you know, you're naturally shifting, whatever it is. When you look at your closet and you don't fit in half of your clothes, we do the exact same thing. We just close the doors up and ignore it.
Yeah, I mean, guilt and shame have no price tags. I mean, it could be a $5 item or a $5,000 item. It just seeps through everything. And I think, you know, bringing it to the light, bringing it to your conscious awareness of what's really going on. And, you know, I find that there's usually a very direct correlation of the guilt source in the item that issue. I mean, whether it's one or several items, and really tracing that back to its source. So if it's a clothing item that you regret purchasing because it was more than you should have spent, it could have been traced back to the day that you purchased it, of what was going on. This is actually something that happened to me recently. I spent too much money on a pair of boots, and it was a total like therapy shopping day. I was like really upset.
We've all had them.
And so there, like I said, there's usually a very direct correlation of the guilt or the shame or the whatever emotion is going on for you. And, you know, bringing that to your conscious awareness, and then just, you know, at the end of the day, like, you have to just give yourself a break and having compassion for the situation. Any other thoughts on energy?
That's it to say, hey, look, okay, made a bad purchase. We've all done it. And you know what? We're going to keep doing it. It's something that happens, and it's something that, you know, the more mindful you are in really taking care of your space and protecting your space so that when you make purchases, you pay attention to why you're bringing it into your house. One, why are you buying it? Is it something you need or something you want? 80% of the time, it's something we want. Not always what we need. Think about when you're bringing it into your house, where's it going to go? Okay? Aside from, you know, food, you know, the obvious locations of certain items, regular routine purchases. But you know where it's going to go. So let's say you're clothes shopping. Like, okay, this is another beautiful black blouse. How many do you have already? Do you need more? Or are you replacing one? Is one going to leave your closet and this is a replacement? So pay attention to when things come in the house, if something can move out, is ultimately the flow that you want. It's a system, and you're replacing versus adding to. And there, the art of simplicity, and the reason why simplicity feels so calming is because when we have too many choices, that puts us into overwhelm. Mm. And, you know, 40, 50 years ago, we didn't have all these choices on food products and clothing and, you know, technology is a whole other level of trying to keep up with. It's the more simplistic that you live and the less choices you have to make on a minute-by-minute basis, on a day-to-day basis, but really hourly, the more energy that you're going to have, the more brain energy you're going to have, the more physical energy you're going to have, because Americans in particular suffer from decision fatigue because we have such an abundance of pretty much everything. There's nothing that our country in particular needs. There's nothing that we need. We have food, we have shelter, we have safety, we have, we have homes, we have, ways to get around. Like, we've got clean water, we've got everything that we need. But for whatever reason, we need to supersize everything, and that's the marketing we buy into. So what ends up happening, to fast forward that thought, is we buy too much. And so just the simple, act of making a decision on something is a lot of energy. There's an article that that's been coming out recently about how a lot of the, especially the high-tech CEOs right now, the Mark Zuckerbergs and really busy executives are wearing the same outfit every day because they suffer from decision fatigue. They have so many decisions they have to make every day that if they just wear the same color T-shirt and the same jeans, the same pair, the same style every single day, that's one less decision they have to make.
Oh, wow.
And it's amazing. And I think there's kind of a brilliance to that.
Right.
Because.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say this segues really nicely to what I wanted to touch on for a minute. And that is the abundance of choices that we have. And what I work with a lot of clients that are of the baby boom, or I guess older than baby, the World War II generation, or born in that area. And I find with them a real need for them holding on to things, a little bit of lack mindset, but it's only because, how much our world has changed since in these generations of when you really didn't, there wasn't an abundance. There wasn't a lot of things and items around, and to have, a dining room table or to have books was a big deal. And so I find this generation really prone to holding on to things because of that growing up mindset. And now we're living in a world, like you said, where there really is an overabundance of production, arguably. And I feel like that generation is struggling a bit with all these things, and plus adding on that the need to hold on to them. I imagine you see this a lot with your clients as well.
You're so dead on. Yeah, absolutely. And generationally, like our parents' generation, perfect example is grandmother's china,
mm-hmm.
that once had huge value, and that's where all your wedding gifts come from. Everything was built upon, building this beautiful, table setting. Just one example. And that was also in the era where there was a lot of home-cooked meals. There was a lot of gatherings at the house. There was a little more formal gatherings. And what's up happening now?
I've got
a little echo on the line.
Do you hear that?
Oh, no, I can hear you okay.
Okay. So now what's happening with this next generation coming in, the millennials, they want experiences.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want stuff. So they're going out to eat a lot. And when people come over, it's, whether they bring takeout or whatnot, they're not doing sit-down dinners. They're not doing a lot of entertaining in their homes. They want to live in really small homes that are really clean and really minimal. And all of grandma's china is going nowhere. And you can see that shift generationally of, you know, what was a value at one point is no longer of value or desired at this generation. Now, things skip a generation. It might all come back, you know, in the next 20, 30 years.
Well, I think, not to get too esoteric, but, I mean, we're moving from the third dimensional world into a very much fourth dimensional of you know, everything being in the mind space with the technology. And so things, physical things, just don't have the same importance as they once did.
Yeah, exactly. And it's working with that, the older generation, it's hard to convince them that what was once of value doesn't have any value anymore. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have market value. Selling it's, you know, nominal. Their kids don't want it. They don't know, but they don't want to part with it either.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge to it. I think a lot of people that are trying to downsize, and I encourage the kids to take those items, and then they can do what they will with them. But to just have them physically passed down, I think there's something that that generation needs to see it go somewhere that feels important, and then maybe hold on to it until they pass, and then do with it what you will. Because it's kind of like a handing over of the torch or handing over of heirlooms that people this generation just doesn't want it in their home anymore, or even to begin with. So you're right. Things are really, really shifting away from the material items having huge importance, which I think is great from a clutter standpoint. But it's going to take time.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, I mean, we all have, and this is what I tell, you know, my audience usually is, at the end of the day, we all have a different different amount of what feels good around us. And so some of us are minimalist, some of us like a lot more knickknacks, and there's nothing wrong with either of those spectrums. So what's important is when you know you don't feel good in your space. And, you know, in my opinion, the goal is not for someone to have the most neat and tidy home in the world, but it needs to be a very happy home and a healthy home. And the walls certainly don't need to feel like they're coming in on you. And one of the best indicators of that is if you feel stuck in your life, then that means there's a stuckness in your home, and you have to that's when the decluttering process comes into effect. So, you know, I tell people, it's like, you don't have to have this minimal, you know, zen home if that's not what feels good to you. But really tuning into what does feel good.
Yeah. And some people, if they struggle with what feels good and what they want, because they're getting too much in their head about it. I encourage them to drop into their bodies, and when they look at something, their intuition and their body and their gut's going to tell them if that item feeds them and energizes them, or if it does just the opposite, if it just kind of sucks energy and life out of them. And how you can tell is if you look at something, an item, or, you know, a piece of furniture or an area of your home. And for me personally, if I inhale, I'm like, oh, beautiful. Like, I inhale because it feels good. It's like you're breathing it in because it's bringing you energy and it's bringing you joy. And maybe that's because there's some sentimental value to it that just puts a smile on your face, or it's so beautiful, or you just are connected to it on a you know, emotional level, then that's a good thing. If you look at something and you find your shoulder slump and a big exhale comes out, that is energy suck. because it's something that you look at that has some negative emotional connection of like, oh, there's that gift from Aunt Martha. What am I going to do with that? And
yeah, I mean, this is exactly, this is so, I'm so glad we're talking about this because I get this a lot with my students. They're like, you know, or with clients of like, should I keep this or should I not? Like, what's the rule around if you get a gift from Aunt Martha, you know? And I tell people it's not that clear cut. It really does come down to how you feel about it. And I love your technique. Some other techniques I've used, I once had a friend who came over and she muscle tested me as I held this pillow and I had justified every reason in the world to like it. And my body was saying no. I've also started using a pendulum. So for anyone who uses pendulums, you can just hold a pendulum over an item and see if it's a positive spin or negative spin. Another technique is similar to what you were just saying is, you know, hold the item in your hand and does your body sway forward or away from it? And so, you know, there are no clear-cut rules with whether you should keep something or not. And really your body holds the wisdom. So I love that you brought that up.
Yeah, and it does every time. And that's kind of one of those, whether it's a blouse, you know, whether it's clothing, whether it's jewelry, whether it's, you know, the picture frame, it doesn't matter what it is. All of these tools will work with it, which is beautiful. And it's up to you. You know if it feels good or not. I get a lot of clients that say, you know, can you give me permission, you know, to get rid of this? Like, hey, that permission is not from me. You know, let's talk about it. And because there's so much guilt and that emotion is so strong. Now, if it's a gift, for example, and you really are struggling with you don't like it, you don't want it, but for, you know, maybe several reasons, you're holding on to it. That gift holds energy. And while that gift, the intention of the gift, we'd like to believe, is that it's something the giver liked and makes maybe their heart smile and they wanted to share it with you. And they may not necessarily be thinking of you and the style of your home and how it looks and, you know, if you would enjoy it or not. It's something maybe sentimental to them that they're giving it to you. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's when you receive it, how does it make you feel? Now, if you can embrace the intention of it and you hold on to it, because when you see that gift, you think of your friend or your family member and you're like, you know what, that was this, I don't really care for it, but I like it because I love the fact that this brought so much joy to them and I think of them every time I look at it. It could be something like that. Or it could be like, okay, and maybe that wears out too after like a, you know, a period of time, you're like, okay, now I'm kind of done with it. That item, as with every item in your home, and Tisha, you can go off on this, holds a vibration, and there's an energy to it. So by taking that gift, look at it as a living vibrational, you know, being, and that when you pass that off, someone else, it's going to bring joy to somebody else. If it's not bringing you joy, move it out of your home so that it can go live and bring joy in somebody else's home or in their world. And it's moving that energy out, not because it's meant to be discarded. It's just meant to move on. And so I look at that with gifts. It's about regifting, whether you're regifting to somebody who you know will love it or you're regifting to donation. You know, someone is going to look at that and be like, I'm really happy to have that. And so that's how I look at gifts that come through, that it's just temporarily landing in my home, and then I'm going to move it along and continue its life with somebody that will appreciate it more than me.
That's amazing. I love that. That's actually what they say about gemstones and crystals.
about what?
Gemstones and crystals, they only stay with you as long as and then they'll just disappear and they go on to someone else.
Yeah. And I think that, so when people.
Yeah. If we could have that same detachment around all items that they're in our possession, that'd be amazing.
And yeah. And just look at stuff as like, okay, it's just time to move it along. And it helps you release the emotion that's keeping it in your home. And to let go, to say, you know, I don't have to have emotion around this. I can just move it along. I'm choosing to have emotion around it, but I don't have to.
Well, Nikki, I'm going to wrap us up a little bit. I want to talk here about your offerings that you have. You work one-on-one with people, in addition to you have a 90-day program. Talk about anything that you, how you're available to work with people.
Awesome. Thank you. So I work with people individually. I do a lot of coaching around their space and their flow, and particularly around overwhelm. I have a 90-day Mining for Joy program that is a coaching program. I can work with them in person, depending on location. I also work with people via Skype. So I have a lot of clients that aren't local to me in Northern California, but I work with them on Skype, and we get just as much done.
Yes.
I'm in the middle of right now a spring clutter cleanse, which is an online program. It's a 6-week online program that is a jumpstart program to help people get going on their spring clutter cleansing of their home, their office, just kind of getting the winter cobwebs out and getting some fresh air back into their space. I also do a lot of just deep dives with people. So if you've got a big project you're working on, or sometimes you just need some support, we can work on many different levels. So it's pretty customized to what people are looking for and what their ultimate goal is. So I encourage people to come to my site. I offer a complimentary strategy call, so we can get that set up and just to get a sense of what you need and how I can best help you. And they can find me at BeckyBacon.com.
BeckyBacon.com. Trimming the fat. That should be your tagline.
Oh, I like that. I think we're on to something. That's going to show up somewhere. Watch for that. Awesome. Thank you so much, Tisha, for having me on your show.
As always, I love talking with you, and we'll be doing a workshop next weekend up in Becky's neck of the woods. And
I'm so excited for that. It's going to be a fun 4 hours of helping a lot of people with their clutter and getting their spaces aligned to clear the clutter and bring in what they want in their lives. So you and I are going to have a great time. It's going to be a hoot.
Awesome. All right. So any more information on Becky, it can be found at BeckyBacon.com. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And I will be back here May 16th with talking about the soul of a home. So see you then, and have a wonderful day. Thanks so much. Bye.